From the Land de Grande University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of January, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. We'll take a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon, and we'll hear the weather forecast, too. That with Mike Tenuram from tstorm.net. All on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today at $5.87.5, 11.5 cents lower. The May contract at $5.89.5, down 11.25. And December futures a half lower at $5.57.75. March soybeans $13.77.25, down 22 cents. May futures at $13.87.25, down 21. And November contract new crop down 8 cents at $13.04.5. The bean meal $7.30 lower at $408.90, and the bean oil at $58.44, down 93 cents. Wheat futures 11 cents lower at $7.46.75 for the soft red, the hard red at $7.59.75, down 18.25 cents. And the live cattle futures for the afternoon settled the nearby contract at $140.97.5. That was up 45 cents. Feeders at $166.72.5, $1.70 higher, and lean hogs were down 7.5 cents at $85.32.5. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net is out of the office. However, his colleague Jim McCormick is in this afternoon. Hi, Jim. Thanks for filling in today. I appreciate that.
Well, thanks for having me, Todd. Good afternoon.
Let's start with yesterday's report, and then we can talk about, I don't know whether today's fallout or what happened today, but what did you see yesterday and how did it play into the overnight trade and today's trade?
Well, I think overall, Todd, yesterday, for once, we really didn't have kind of an earth-shattering report. It really kind of was within range of expectations. Maybe the corn ending stock number was a little bit higher than the average trade guess, so I think that put a little bit of pressure on the corn market today. And then probably the other thing kind of, I think, surprised people was the wheat number. The wheat number grew a little bit, and more importantly, that winter wheat acreage number was, I think, a lot higher than some people were thinking. And kind of here in the Midwest, especially when you look at the soft red wheat stocks, or excuse me, acres, Todd, they were up almost 422,000, which tells me you're probably going to plant a little less corn this upcoming year in the Midwest.
And still, we had a market that turned lower overnight and stayed that way throughout the day today. Corn off, soybeans as well. What were the driving forces then?
Well, I think there's the big driving force right now is the weather situation in South America and just kind of the momentum. The bean market yesterday, Todd, on the report, we kind of got a negative number for the United States. The carryout was put at 350 million, close to the average trade guess. And then the world number was dropped more than the traders think, and the beans had a nice reversal yesterday, but we saw zero follow through yesterday. So that when we came in overnight thinking kind of follow through, that was kind of the first red flag. The second thing that really kind of gave us a little bit more risk off is we have a three-day weekend. The markets are closed on Sunday night and Monday due to the Martin Luther King holiday. They will open up Monday evening, but between now and then, they're really worried about how this forecast is changing in South America. Right now, it is blazing hot in Argentina, 100, 105, 110 degree temps. Some of these models are saying, hey, by the time we get into early to the middle part of next week, a cold front's going to come through. It's going to break that heat and bring some very, very needed rain in. But as we all know, a forecast of rain 5 days out doesn't necessarily mean it's going to materialize. But I think the uncertainty of rain in the forecast was enough for some of the longs to take some profits as well.
Is it too little too late for them, or is that crop not far enough into the season in some places yet that it might be helpful?
It's going to help some places. Argentina, roughly 40% of the Argentina corn crop is, quote unquote, the early corn crop. That crop is just getting the tar beat out of it, to put it bluntly. I mean, you've got a lot of that corn pollinating in this 100-degree heat. So that crop is really going to take it on the chin. But the later corn crop that was planted later, it still could get a reprieve from rain. Same thing for parts of Brazil as well, has been dry. If they would get some rain, that would also help part of the production there. Northern Brazil actually has been way too wet. As this rain has been going north, it's almost, they're getting 100, 200, 300% normal rainfall. this pattern change right now is argumentatively like they're going to take some of that heavy rain, push it south, which should allow some of that early harvest to begin in the northern part of Brazil as well.
Here in the United States, what's the situation cash grain-wise like on the ground across to the Midwest?
Well, right now, I think overall, you're seeing quite a bit of grain move. The northern Midwest is kind of locked down with these bitter cold temps. They're starting to move grain. In general, I think it is moving. You're seeing the basis overall hang in there. It's dipping a little bit. But, you know, we're in a really interesting situation, Todd, I think, across the Midwest right now. The producer has a lot of cash right now. The money that was deferred, the deferred income from 2021 into 2022 was record amounts is what the elevators are telling us, 20, 30, 40% higher than they've ever had before. So the farmer right now is very, very flush with cash. So it's going to be kind of an interesting situation as we start trying to decide, you know, who's going to move corn and how to entice that person to move corn at this point in time, or beans for that matter, because they really don't need to do it for money reasons. It tends to be more about logistics and guys just keeping the trucks moving.
Yeah, the checks have been delivered. Producers are flush with cash from those checks. They don't need to move grain, but should they move grain really is the question.
I would say yes. I mean, I would look at where it's at. We've had a big push up. You had $14 beans. You've had $6 corn. We fueled that run mostly on this dry weather from South America. We found the product. So if they start getting a change in rain, that probably is going to stall this market out for both corn and beans. The other thing you got to remember is what's happening in the United States. We now, you know, the crop size has been decided. The correlated grain stocks have been decided for another month or for another 3 months. There's not going to be a whole lot of news to fuel this market higher unless the Chinese come in and buy. So if you're a producer and you're holding back right now saying, I want to hold on to my grain because I think it's going to higher, I think you're counting on the Chinese to be the ones that drive it. And I just don't know if I'd recommend doing that. I mean, there's a lot of option places where you can say, hey, if I want to sell the grain and re-own it into some, you know, the lack of carry in some of these markets, say, hey, it's worthwhile maybe re-owning July calls out in July, but cutting that risk and, you know, keeping those trucks moving.
Old crop corn lost around 11 cents. However, new crop stayed steady for the day. That seems like it might have been a good sign.
I think it's a good sign. And I think the one thing, Todd, I think you really got to look at is the December 23 corn. It was actually up 2.5 cents. And what's really interesting about that corn contract specifically is it's rallied about 38.5 cents in the last 6 days. Okay. It started the buying 4 days before the quarterly grain stock report and just kind of rallied into it today. If you look back on the chart, back on the September, right before the September quarterly grain stock report, this contract did the same thing. It rallied 34 cents in 6 days. And then we saw a pretty good correction. So we think here at our group thinks you're seeing some index fundamental money coming in and buying this market for the long-term inflationary play. It's driving the market up. They've done it for 6 days in a row. And our belief is we wouldn't be surprised if once these guys quit this round of buying, you'll see that market pull back a little bit. So it might be a good time to maybe look at even doing some 2023 hedging at this point.
And one other item while you're in some of the outside funding of the marketplace, rebalancing has been taking place. Has that had much of an impact across any of the grains floor?
Well, like I said, I think it's had some of this rebalancing you're seeing in the DEES 23. I think you are seeing a little bit of an inflationary buying. The balance sheets in general, I saw how they're going to redo the index rebalancing. It wasn't massive, but we did see some. But in general, Todd, you're seeing a lot of money come into commodities. It was announced today, Goldman Sachs commodity trading unit made $2.2 billion last year trading commodities. A few years back, that same unit only made $300 million. I don't think you're going to see that money come out of the commodities. Goldman Sachs says we are at the very beginning of a 10-year super cycle of commodities. So you got to figure at that point, $2.2 billion profit, a lot of that's going to find its way right back into the commodity markets, which is a good sign for producers because more, you know, I think that money will be dry. The inflationary play will help drive all commodities higher.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Thank you very much for having me.
Jim McCormick is with AgMarket.net. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon, filling in for his colleague, Matt Bennett. In today's agricultural news, the EPA has renewed the enlist product registrations with some new control measures. The Environmental Protection Agency, US EPA, this week issued 7-year registrations for 2 herbicide products, Enlist Duo and Enlist One. The new product labels incorporate robust control measures to protect non-target plants and animals, according to the EPA. Both products were set to expire in January. The new control measures include prohibiting Enlist product application when rainfall is expected to occur within 48 hours and when soil can no longer absorb water, and prohibiting irrigation that would result in runoff within 48 hours of application. EPA will also require mandatory education and training materials that emphasize the importance of pollinators and pollinator habitats. Other measures include minimizing Enlist product applications when soybean and cotton crops are in bloom to reduce risk to insect pollinators such as honeybees, and prohibiting use in countries where EPA identified risk to on-field listed species that use corn, cotton, or soybean fields for diet and or habitat. Well, Growth Energy has announced its 2022 policy priorities. Growth Energy Wednesday released an outline of the organization's 2022 top federal priorities for the United States biofuels industry. Growth Energy CEO Emily Skor says of the policy objectives, if we want to decarbonize the transportation sector, we must use all the tools in the toolbox, including plant-based biofuels like ethanol, which reduce carbon emissions by 46% compared to gasoline. Now, specifically, Skor highlighted the association's key priorities, focusing on opportunities for regulators and policymakers to promote cleaner fuel choices, reduce carbon emissions, and protect the environment. The objective incorporates restoring certainty to the renewable fuels standard, including finalizing strong renewable volume obligations, or RVOs, for 2021 and 2022, rejecting improper and illegal retroactive cuts to the already finalized 2020 RVOs, and rejecting all pending and improperly granted small refinery exemptions. Other priorities for Growth Energy, says Skor, include eliminating barriers to higher blends of low-carbon ethanol and utilizing biofuel as a low-cost pathway to achieve climate goals. And finally, the Department of Agriculture announced Wednesday a $9 million investment in new cooperative extension and USDA climate hubs. The investment seeks to bolster climate research and connect and share climate smart solutions directly with the agricultural community. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says the partnerships, quote, will strengthen climate research efforts and accelerate the development, adoption, and application of science-based climate smart practices that benefit everyone. The investment is part of the National Institute of Food and Agriculture's Agriculture and Food Research Initiative, the nation's leading competitive grants program for agricultural sciences. The new program area should provide effective, translatable, and scalable approaches to address climate change through regional partnerships, including the USDA Climate Hubs, and further extends outreach through organizations such as Cooperative Extension Services. The initial 6 funded projects include research efforts at the University of California, Davis, Pennsylvania State University, Montana State, Ohio State University, the Desert Research Institute, and the USDA Caribbean Climate Hub. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, as you'll hear from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting's Michael Clements, new analysis has farmers raising concerns over the potential tariffs on fertilizer, especially as it's related to the price of corn and anhydrous ammonia.
A new study commissioned by state corn associations has farmers raising concerns about a petition by CF Industries, one of the country's major nitrogen producers, with the U.S. International Trade Commission to impose tariffs on nitrogen fertilizers imported from Trinidad and Tobago and Russia, according to NCGA President Chris Edgington.
The Texas A&M study pretty clearly showed that the price of anhydrous ammonia is not that closely tied to natural gas prices anymore. Is very closely tied to the price of corn. But an even broader perspective is people talk about tariffs. They think that it's only on the stuff you import. And what it really shows is tariffs for ag products coming into the U.S. raise the cost of all of those products. domestic produced or internationally produced, just because of the law of economics and supply and demand.
The looming tariffs come at a time that Edgington says prices are already high and supplies are short. The study notes that the price of anhydrous ammonia increased by $688 per ton, $86,000 for a 1,000-acre farm, from the end of 2020 through the end of October 2021.
That's kind of like sticker shock to somebody that puts on all of their product in the spring. And on a personal basis, I'm a farmer that uses all UAN, so we use all liquid products. And they're still not sure we're going to have that supply. Liquid is a tough one to store simply because of the vast quantity of storage you need. So you've got to have production going on at the same time. There's a lot of concern about whether we will have the products we need in a timely manner this spring. We can't wait till the middle of July to put nitrogen on.
The supply and price issues have farmers exploring other options for their crops this year.
Well, the first thing we're after is we want them to quit asking for tariffs. Pull back on the requests they've already got, and they've got that ability. They can go back to the Trade Commission and the Commerce and say, hey, you know what? The market has changed so dramatically. We need to relook at that. Obviously, there are some other avenues out there that other people may be looking at and pursuing, but we don't have a huge toolbox to work with here. And so first thing we need to do is maybe we need to have a sit-down conversation with these companies. We've got some more studies. There's other people looking at things, but we are definitely trying to get a handle on the input costs.
Learn more at ncga.com. Michael Clements reporting.
Our thanks to Michael Clements from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting for bringing us that story. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do visit our website. There you'll find a schedule of upcoming events that include next Wednesday's Crop Management Conference in Mount Vernon, Illinois. There's also an online version of that conference, and that one in Mount Vernon is just the first of four. If you keep running through the schedule, you'll find these 2022 crop management conferences across the state of Illinois. They'll help you out, especially if you're in need of some CCA units. That's a certified crop advisor units. You can pick up 12 of those educational units, either online or in person at one of the 2022 crop management conferences. Again, the first one is next week, Wednesday, January the 19th in Mount Vernon, and then they follow up in the month of February as well. It's all on our website. Look in the schedule at willag.org, willag.org. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mike Tenuri. He's at tstorm.net. Thanks, Mike, for being with us today. Can you start in South America for me? There's been a break in the marketplace. I suppose that may be because there's some rainfall on the way, but there's heat and other things to get through before we get to that. Can you lay out what Argentina looks like over the next week or so?
Sure, that sounds great. Well, they're in the middle of an incredible heat wave at the moment. High temperatures today, tomorrow, and Saturday will be in the mid-100s to the mid-110s. And this is not a typical situation for them, because their all-time record highs are in the mid-100s. So we're talking about one of the great all-time heat waves for Argentina, and that's taking place again today, tomorrow, and Saturday. It will gradually break over the 3 days that follow, and then we get into a cooler period for several days next week. Now, temperatures are going to drop by 30 to 40 degrees, so we'll be having highs around 110 degrees, say, for the next few days, and then only in the 80s after that, so a pretty big drop. But along with that change will be some rain. We'll see some storms fire up on Sunday and Monday when the initial cool front passes, and then the main system moves through later next week. And between all of that, we're thinking about 1 to 3 inches of rain is on the way over the next 10 to 14 days. Now, you need to keep in mind a couple of things. Number one is that it's really dry out there. Our proprietary data shows that 97% of soybean production was considerably drier than normal over the last 30 days. And so even though we do have some good rains coming up, this is only going to stabilize the situation more than likely. Once we get more than 10 days out, it's hard to say what's going to happen. But we don't see a strong signal for a big heat wave or anything like that again. But at the moment, things are pretty bad, and it is going to get a little bit worse before it starts to get a little better.
In these areas, how far along are the crops, do you know?
Well, the early planted corn should be in the pollinating and even past pollinating phase at the moment. So certainly that crop is being affected by this heat. Second crop corn is planted later, And it would still be pretty sensitive. It would kind of be like having this in the end of June or something like that. For soybeans, they started being planted in the beginning of December. And so it's a little more early in the season for that crop. But we have seen examples of severe droughts and heat waves in the beginning of the growing season drop their yields quite a bit. So even though there is rain on the way, and I understand what you're getting at, which is maybe some of the rain coming up is going to be well timed to get out of the situation, it seems pretty unlikely that you'll ever fully get out of this. It's just too dry and it's too hot, and rain that follows, while certainly helpful, isn't going to totally reverse everything.
Is the situation very different once you cross the borders into Paraguay and southern Brazil?
Oh, I would argue it was worse in those areas, especially Paraguay, Rio Grande do Sul, and Paraná. Now, their crop was planted a lot earlier, especially the soybean crop, so it went through its main phases of development in December and then into early January, where we had the driest November-December period on record in all three of these states, or at least very close to the number one driest in Rio Grande do Sul and Paraguay. But basically, it's been extremely dry there. And we do have some rain coming up over the next week or so, but it will be hot there in the 90s almost every day going forward. And typically they'd be a little bit cooler because it rains a lot. They average about 3 inches of rain every 2 weeks at this time of the year. And we're looking for 1 to 2 inches over the next 2 weeks, with most of that backloaded 5 to 10 days out and maybe a little bit beyond that. So that situation is a little bit late because all their damage, if there was damage, probably already happened.
And then further to the north, once we get into the primary growing region of Mato Grosso, maybe into the northeastern regions, state of Tocantins, how's the situation on the ground today?
Well, it's very wet. Mato Grosso and Goiás, if you combine those two areas and make them one region, had their wettest November-December period in more than 42 years. And if we look at what's happened in Goiás since January started, they've had about 7 inches of rain over January 1st to 11th, and they only average about 9 inches, maybe 10, for the entire month. So it's just raining and raining and raining. Now, Mato Grosso hasn't been quite as wet since January started, but certainly once you start to move a little bit further to the east into Bahia, Minas Gerais, and then Tocantins, those areas have also been pretty wet. So it's a very unusual growing season, Todd. I mean, these areas in the north are really wet. These areas in the south are really dry. Argentina started to get in on some of the drought action, but it looks like that's going to break after an exceptional heat wave. So how does all this play out in the end? It's hard to say, but I would just point out that all of these things are not normal. You know, I know sometimes people talk about, oh, we hear people complaining that it's too dry, people complaining that it's too hot, everything always works out. In this situation, probably everything won't work out. It's just been too much of a problematic situation. And in those northern areas, it's probably been too wet. We'll just have to wait and see what the yield reports say coming out.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep, sounds great.
That's Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. You can find more from him at tstorm.net. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.